We're rocking the talk.
Welcome home. Yeah.
WSJS Winston-Salem, Greensboro, High Point, Burlington. Online at WSJS.com. The workday is done. Social media is heating up.
Ding, ding, boys. School's in session.
Welcome to Sports Talk with Personality. You riding with us?
Yes.
Great. Coming to argue?
That's a given. That's a given.
Even better.
Let's get the show going.
Clock out, crank up.
People got the popcorn. Let's give them a show.
The drive starts now on WSJS.
Welcome in to a Tuesday drive. This weather stinks. It does. We needed the rain, but it stinks. I don't know, something about like the dreary weather, it makes you want to stay in, makes you want to just eat chili. At least it makes me want to eat chili. You might roll a soup. I don't know. Just put you in a certain type of mood. You got to... And when you got work to do, like we do right here on this show, you gotta get yourself into action on days like this, which we did. Because we got stuff to talk about. Cooper Flagg won Rookie of the Year last night. 336-777-1600. Do you agree with that? Got a feeling a lot of Hornets fans don't. But at the end of the day, these awards, this MVP, it comes down to the flash. It comes down to the name. And we love Con Knipple around here. He had an incredible rookie year. The dude is going to be a stud for a long time to come. And that all can be true, but the bottom line is, after the way Con Knipple played at points of the last month, maybe more so the last several weeks, 2-3 weeks of the regular season. You factor in the play-in game as well, where he went 0-6 from 3. I got a feeling he played his way out of the Rookie of the Year voting among some of the voters. And then all at the same time, Cooper Flagg, his last month of the year, I mean, good grief. Now you look at some of these numbers, which I did. I mean, some of these lines the last month when he got back from the injury, I mean, 33 against the Spurs April 10th, and you had 25 against the Clippers, Morgan's Clippers over there, 45 against the Lakers, 51 against the Magic. Those were back-to-back performances. That's when people really started to take notice. 32 against Golden State at the end of March, like, you see where I'm going here. Like, he had enough of those type performances his last month of the year to kind of edge his way back to the front of that conversation, because Con Knipple was out in front there for a little bit while Cooper Flagg was out due to injury. Knipple got a little bit of ground on him there. But I believe the NBA award voters always wanted it to be Cooper, especially with it being this razor thin, one of the closer races that we've seen in Rookie of the Year. Probably something that factored into this, when, since you want to talk about flash and you want to talk about name when it comes to these types of things. Cooper Flagg was the first rookie since MJ, Michael Jordan, to lead his team in points, rebounds, assists, steals. It's pretty impressive. Impressive enough to get the nod for Rookie of the Year, methinks. And again, we talked about some of these incredible games he had. Now, a lot of that was due to output. I think he saw that, and the Mavericks saw that Knipple had the edge on him, and they wanted to ramp up his production a little bit. Mavericks weren't going to the playoffs. They weren't going anywhere. Give it all to Cooper. And he went from 17 attempts per game before his injury, got bumped up to about 19, 20 attempts per game from the field after the injury. That factors into some of those numbers. So the bottom line is, the voters wanted the name. They wanted the number one overall pick. That historic MJ line that I just told you about, over a guy in Con Knipple who also had really good numbers for a rookie. Not quite as good as Cooper's, but not far off. I mean, Cooper averaged about 21 a game. Con averaged 18.5. 5.3 assist or 5.3 rebounds for Knipple, 6.7 for Cooper, 4.5 assists for Cooper. Knipple had 3.4. Knipple finished with a 47.5 field goal percentage on his year. Cooper had 46.8. So everything was razor thin, but in terms of the output and points, Cooper got a little bit of an edge on him there. And we can make the winning culture argument all we want. We being people who, you know, people who live here in North Carolina, probably a little bit of bias, even if you don't want to admit it, but I will. In terms of media around here who covers such things, we were literally having this conversation with Will Pelagic, the voice of Charlotte FC, two Fridays ago, in terms of there is some of that, Dallas media versus Charlotte media, or North Carolina media in general. And it came down to the flashy numbers, the number one overall pick, the name on Cooper Flagg's side of thing, and Con Knipple, who really, really helped add to a winning culture that started to take place when the calendar flipped to 2026 for the Charlotte Hornets. Which do you value more? And unfortunately, when it comes to MVP, when it comes to Rookie of the Year, you and I both know the voters tend to go with the numbers, because it is an individual award at the end of the day. Like, it's a debate, it's an argument as old as time. Well, what does most valuable mean? You take him off the team and they look a lot different. That's value right there. Or is it just who was the best stud, you know, straight up, pound for pound, point for point? Cooper Flagg wins Rookie of the Year, a tight race against Con Knipple. And just looking at the voting here, in terms of the first place votes, Cooper had 56, Con had 44, but yeah, there was somebody who gave Con Knipple a third place vote and gave VJ Edgecombe a second place vote.
Take his vote away.
Gee, I wonder where they reside. Might be Philly, just saying. 336-777-1600 is the number to call. Did the voters get it right? Should Cooper Flagg have won Rookie of the Year over Con Knipple, the two Duke roommates, which is just an incredible story. Like, they had to have been texting every night or every other night or whatever it was. Like, just looking at this, the discourse, what we're doing literally right now, talking about this every day. And it's just like, man, like, how cool is, like, they probably, I mean, obviously they're both ultra competitive and one of them, they wanted to win it. But they also probably was like, wow, this is pretty cool. We were roommates at Duke a year ago, and now here we are battling for the best rookie in the NBA. Pretty cool story. But again, 336-777-1600, that's the number to call if you want in on that. Morgan Corson, executive producer of the show. Did they get it right? Should it have been Cooper?
Yeah, they got it right.
You think?
I do. I hate to say that, and I don't root for either one of these teams.
No, you're a Clipper fan.
Yeah.
Ugh.
We could have used either one of these guys. But anyway, I think that they got it right. I think when you're talking about Rookie of the Year, you're not looking for somebody who carried a team or somebody who changed the culture. I think this is unfortunately turned into a numbers award.
Yeah.
And Cooper Flagg, while inconsistent with injuries, put up better numbers. But if I had a vote, I would have put it in for Con. Because you don't just shoot make 273 three-pointers in a year as a rookie. That's not something that happens ever.
The most.
So I would have probably done Con, but it would have been very difficult for me to put a vote, but I would have said Con. But I think with how the voting looks now, they got it right with Cooper.
Con only missed one game this year. Just one. Pretty impressive stuff. Getting to our YouTube comments here. By the way, you can watch us on YouTube, the Drive with Will Dalton, and then on X, WSJS Radio. You can watch us, you know. It's not just audio. We got a lot of different options for you at the buffet. Like Jay Davis in here, one of our favorites. What's impressive is that MJ actually took his team to the playoffs his rookie year. Yeah, Con about did it. Khan about did it, but Khan, it probably wouldn't have been because of Khan Kaneva, because he wasn't playing overly great in the play-in tournament. Got a little better down the stretch of game two there, but not really. Also, Ad should have been co-rookie of the years, in my opinion. I get that, but no. I hate co-anything. Like, pick one. Who is it, you know? I get where you're coming from, Jay Davis, and I get it. I understand. And there is a part of you that's like, yeah, they were both so great. Just, but at the end of the day, somebody's got to get it. And to me, a co-rookie of the year or co-anything just feels like a cop-out. Anyway, let's talk about some football. Because one of the biggest stories from the NFL draft, Ty Simpson getting taken by the Rams. Number 13 overall pick out of Alabama. It was the debate. Is he going to be a first-round pick? Is he not? Dan Orlovsky thought so. He's still taking a victory lap. So, looking a little closer at the details here, it seems the Rams had a master plan to make this happen, to take Ty Simpson at number 13. Let's look at the details of why I'm telling you that is. Now, I, just to be frank, before I get into those details, I did have the Rams as one of my losers of the NFL draft yesterday. I did. We did winners and losers, like Raiders, they were a winner. Browns, I think they were a winner. Jets, believe it or not, I think was a winner. Panthers were. I did have the Rams as one of my losers. And maybe I'll be corrected on that when it's all said and done, based on some of the things that we're going to talk about right here. But the reason I felt that way, personally, is strictly because Matt Stafford is about done. This might be his last season. Might be his last real shot at a Super Bowl. And they were right there. They were right there in a battle with Seattle in the NFC title game. Just didn't quite go their way. And if you get Matt Stafford one more weapon, just one more, like Mekhi Lemon out of USC, or maybe, you know, one more lineman to protect him, maybe Monroe Freeling, who ended up in Carolina, maybe take that guy. I think that's, again, Dan Morgan, and they were kind of getting a little nervous, and they were surprised when he fell to them at 19. Could have took him. As opposed to choose Matt Stafford's successor, or what they believe will be his successor already. So, we saw how Sean McVay reacted to the news, and when he was asked about it, made it very clear this is still Matt Stafford's job. It's still his team. Some great theater by Sean McVay. Because as it turns out, apparently there were secret meetings that took place between Ty Simpson and Sean McVay leading up to the draft. Who's my source on that? Ty Simpson. He was very confident ahead of the draft, saying he was going to be a first-round pick. He said that. Again, so did Dan Orlovsky. But Ty Simpson went on ESPN Radio with Ian Fitzsimmons and said this.
I had some secret meetings with, you know, Coach McVay, and, you know, I just was trying to be on script and, you know, do what, you know, everybody told me not to tell anybody. Met at the facility, and it was something to where we just talked for hours and hours, and it was just football. It was just straight football. And it was like a kid in a candy store. You know, me and him are sitting there, and, you know, we're just going back and forth.
So that happened. So, yeah, maybe Sean McVay was more in on this than we all realized. The Rams did do a great job of keeping this under wraps. They did do that because they did not meet with him at the combine. They did not bring him in for one of those top 30 visits. Didn't do that. So they did a pretty good job keeping this, again, secret, as Ty Simpson laid out there. And what I would say is, while I personally don't believe Ty Simpson is going to be that guy, That's just my own opinion. That's irrelevant because the Rams think he actually might be. The Rams, Les Snead, Sean McVay, they think so. And they're planning for the near future just like the Packers did when they took Jordan Love several years ago with Aaron Rodgers still on the roster, very much still in his prime or kind of towards the back part of his prime there. However, the Rams are a pretty buttoned up, competent organization, and I do, while I don't like the pick of Ty Simpson for being that guy, I do like the way they went about it because Sean McVay called Matt Stafford to tell him this was happening. They communicated it. Unlike the Packers with Aaron Rodgers, when they took Jordan Love, they didn't tell him anything. The Falcons didn't tell Kirk Cousins anything, who had just gotten the bag from Atlanta right before they drafted Michael Penix a few years ago. Rams did a lot better job in this process, in my opinion. But don't just take it from me. Let's hear some more about how this all went down. Rams GM Les Snead went on with Pat McAfee earlier today and explained the process a little bit further of why they took Ty Simpson this year.
Here's what doing the QB this year does for us, right? There's an element that we are able to get a possible successor, come in and earn equity, be a backup. But what it does in the future is this, hopefully we're picking late. Let's call it that. Let's call it 27 draft, 28 draft. But when you have a QB that, right, is in the twilight of his career, a lot of times you want to save some of those early picks, right, to ensure just in case Matthew decides, I've had enough.
That's what we call intention. That's a really good explanation and smart explanation of why they did what they did. If Ty Simpson were to actually work out and be that guy, this would be a terrific move. Because they do get their potential successor in there right now to learn under Matt Stafford, to learn under the quarterback whisperer that Sean McVay is, to get in the system already. He's going to get all the preseason snaps. He's going to be a backup, and he's going to get to learn. I love the intention of this move. Even though I don't know that the quarterback himself is the right one, I love the intentionality of this and what they're doing here. And if it works out, they're going to look like geniuses, as they do on many occasions. I mean, Sean McVay is like Elon Musk with a clipboard, with a whistle. Smart dude. Jay Davis chiming in here. He kind of echoed that. I hate the Rams being a Niner fan, but this could be really smart. Comparable to the Chiefs drafting Mahomes and letting him sit a year and learn. Receivers are going to come out every year. That's true. That's true. So, I mean, some of the not-so-great things about Ty Simpson, limited starting experience, some durability issues, but he does have a good football IQ, and he has good mechanics, and Sean McVay likes those things. So, the Rams could end up making everybody look like idiots when it's all said and done. We shall see.
Will Dalton doesn't just talk sports.
A gentleman never talks down to anybody.
He debates them, talking sports in the triad like nobody's mom is listening. This is The Drive.
Back at it on The Drive right here on WSJS. Will Dalton here. Also known as the WD, rocking with you on a dreary Tuesday. Ugh, gross looking weather out there. Jay Davis in our comments here. When did Sean McVay become the quarterback whisperer? I thought that was Shanahan.
Shout out Trey Lance.
Jeez, Morgan from the top rope. A little bit of 49er bitterness coming out here against the Rams. I mean, listen. Sean McVay absolutely is a quarterback. I mean, there can be more than one quarterback whisper. More than one person can whisper.
I would say Sean McVay is the modern Bill Belichick.
I don't know.
Not
about
like football, like level brain.
IQ.
I mean, not
yeah.
Like success yet, but like IQ level. Like
from an offensive standpoint, yes. I'd say. Belichick was more defensive. But I mean, look at this. I mean, he took a struggling Jared Goff, turned him around into a Super Bowl starter. Matt Stafford, I mean, he was already really good in Detroit, but that elevated his game coming out there. Baker Mayfield, anyone? The brief little period he spent out there in 2022 and revived his career? Absolutely, quarterback whisperer. There can be more than one Jay Davis. I can whisper, you can whisper, Morgan can whisper. We can all whisper in unison if we want to. 49er fan. All right. We debuted a new segment last week called Soundcheck. It's where we find some of the good clips that are circulating right now. Allows us to branch out from maybe things that we would normally just be talking about on a regular basis. And I got some doozies. Let's get to it in Soundcheck.
Soundcheck.
Hey, I'm just here so I won't get fined.
Plug in, turn up, and catch what everyone's talking about.
All right, we got to start with Stephen A. He's got the NASCAR world all fired up, and not in a good way. I punched my mic. You know, I became notorious for that as a producer. I don't do it too much as a host anymore, but you never know with me. I might pull a little Mike Tyson on that mic every once in a while. Stephen A. on his podcast about a week ago said, so he was doing like a caller engagement question and was asking, like, I guess some, who do you consider some of the best athletes of all time, like just overall? And somebody from Greensboro actually called in, so shout out to our people, the Triad, and said this.
Come on, man.
Hey.
That don't count. You driving a car.
Oh, now, you're upsetting a lot of your fan base, Stephen A.
I don't give a damn. I'm being honest. I mean, it's a great sport. I'm not saying that. But come on, bro. I mean, because guess what? You can get behind the wheel of a car at 75 years old. That don't count. That's not the same. That has no place in this category. You actually should be ashamed of yourself calling up here trying to slide that in. A NASCAR driver is not an athlete.
So, he threw out Richard Petty. That was his selection for one of the best athletes of all time. But then Stephen A. proceeds to say what he just did there, saying that NASCAR drivers are not athletes. He also said golfers aren't athletes either. So, the NASCAR world took exception to this, naturally. Like, Mike Joy on the broadcast this weekend had something to say about it. Didn't even say Stephen A. by name. He just said some online influencer. the pettiness. Many racers were being asked about it. But Kevin Harvick is about as big of a name as there is in NASCAR, and especially now in NASCAR media circles. Here he was responding to Stephen A.
If you don't know anything about racing, just keep your opinion to yourself, because you shouldn't even have an opinion if you don't know anything about a sport. So I went to the Polar folks who make the watches, and I said, hey, you know, I'd like to have a watch. I'd like to wear it in the car. And I think I burned 3,200 calories. They called me the next week, and they said, hey, we're going to send you another watch. There's something wrong. Yeah, so they sent me the watch the next week. We had a few more cautions, and I think I burned 2,400 calories the next week, because we had so many more moments to where your heart rate went back down during the caution periods. Only things that we see with that much of a calorie burn or constant heart rate are marathon runners. And I think this is just an instance where Stephen A. Smith is looking for clicks on something he knows absolutely nothing about what he's talking about.
Strong words from Kevin Harvick. Yeah, I disagree with Stephen A. on this. There are levels to being an athlete, different forms of athleticism. No, NASCAR is not like football or basketball and the high explosive type of athleticism. But in terms of intensity, in terms of like marathon type, because that's what I've heard it compared to, is like marathon. It, again, sustainability for that long around the track over and over and over and over. The wrecks are no joke. Like, your body has to be able to handle that and take that whenever that happens. NASCAR drivers are as much of athletes as anybody. Stephen A. Smith. Kernersville. I don't even want to play it, and I'm not gonna. Let's move it along. Have you ever been to a Buc-ee's?
I love Buc-ee's.
All right. I have not been to a Buc-ee's. But I'm familiar with their work.
You gotta get some fresh biscuit on the board.
How's that?
There's some fresh biscuit on the board.
Fresh biscuit on the board?
Brisket.
Brisket. They got good brisket?
I do. It's amazing.
I do like a good brisket. So Stanford Steve was on, you know, he and Scott Van Pelt, they do a podcast together. And Stanford Steve said fighting words about Buc-ee's. Listen.
Have you been to Buc-ee's?
Not in my life.
Too big.
Wow.
Telling you.
Buc-ee's slandered late in the pod.
When I drive, I want to get there.
So what's...
When there's stops that have to be made, they have to be made. But I don't want to have to walk around a mall...
I was just going
to
say...
...to get beef jerky.
Is this a gas station or a mall?
Yeah, it's they're unbelievable how big they are. And if you have time and you don't care... I get it. More gas pumps than a city, but it's just too big for me. I want to be in and out.
Here's my point. Haven't been to a Buc-ee's. I'm sure it's delightful, although it does look like the Mall of America.
It's bigger than Target.
That is significant.
They're huge. And the people are delightful and the bathrooms are great, but I don't want to walk a mile and a half to go to the bathroom.
What do you make of this? You've been to one.
It's overwhelming. I didn't know what I was walking into, to be fair, though.
But did you like it when you got there, though? Did you like that overwhelming feeling, or was it too much for you for a pit stop?
They have a whole, like, gift shop of just Buc-ee's stuff the size of a regular gas station. Of just Buc-ee's, like, onesies, hats, shirts, sweatshirts, plushes, pajamas. And then they have, like, a thrift shop corner with, like, goat soap and... It was a lot. But the brisket was good. And I had some Berkey. Jerky, the cherry jerky, that was good. That was good jerky.
See, I'll say this. I have not been to a Buc-ee's, but I've been to enough establishments in the of this type to know I would love going to a Buc-ee's. I like the experience of it all. I like chaos when it comes to my grocery stores, when it comes to shopping. I'm somebody that goes to Costco on Sunday. I like that. It gives me a rush. And I like that overwhelming feeling of just like, oh, it's so much. There's too much out here. I want to explore it all. It's like you can't get enough. I do get what he means in terms of like not wanting to stop. But if I have to stop, I'd like to go to somewhere like a Buc-ee's that has anything I could ever want. And not one of these little death huts on the side of the highway that might have a Gatorade. And some criminals in the back, perhaps. Just saying. All right. So last night, Orlando, Detroit. Orlando looks like they're going to take this series. And the play of the night anywhere was this, where Jalen Duren got absolutely baptized by Jamal Kane.
You could have made on the J's. Okay. Uh-oh. Okay. Turns the corner.
Ah! Oh, we got to see this back.
Yeah, let's look at it again.
Taking it to the rack. Oh, my goodness. He didn't go around and he went over top.
It baptized. Baptized. If you were on our YouTube stream, you got to enjoy that. Last thing. Jerry Jones never fails to give us some good clips. Never fails to give us some good audio. The Cowboys made a trade with Philly over the NFL draft. That's a division rival. But Jerry Jones doesn't care.
If you eliminate all the teams that I want to beat their ass, you wouldn't have anybody to trade with, so to speak. And so, yeah, Philadelphia has a certain edge to it. But you could always rationalize and say, well, I'd like to have some success with that trade. And at the end of the day, I got a bigger grin out of it than they did.
Jerry Jones is something else. I don't think he's a great owner at all in his old age, but he's hilarious. That's actually the pick they used to get Mekhi Lemon, Philly did, right after the Panthers took Monroe Freely. That's been Soundcheck. A very productive sound check, I might say. Covered a lot of ground there. NBA, Stephen A. dishing on NASCAR, Buc-ee's. pretty good. Pretty good.
All right, let's go.
Oh, I'm so excited.
And 3, 2, 1, go.
The Triad's ride home just got louder. Welcome to the drive.
On the drive right here on WSJS. It's one of my favorite segments whenever we do it. It's Nerd Corner. It's where we dive into video games, movies, tech. It's a nice little space for the nerdy people of us out here, of which I am. Morgan, you seem like you are as well. It's the question I want to know the answer to. What is the best handheld video game console of all time? I know my answer. Let's get into it.
Talk nerdy to me.
For the curious mind, knowledge never sounded so good.
Talk nerdy to me.
It's where nerdiness takes the mic. Tune in. Geek out.
Your attention, please.
From sci-fi to Wi-Fi.
Talk nerdy to me.
Nerd Corner starts now with Will Dalton.
Get nerdy with me.
Morgan, I'll actually start with you. How would you answer this question?
I'm more of a console player myself, but I have this thing called the Miu Mini.
Okay, you and I, full disclosure, we were having this conversation off air today. Yeah. What is that?
So it's this little Chinese device. It's like a modern Game Boy with four triggers on the back, buttons.
How big is it?
It's little.
You're punching your mic.
It's maybe the size of an index card.
Huh, so not very big at all.
No, and it emulates up to Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance. So it's like for smaller games, and it's a lot of fun. That's my favorite, but they just released this new one, like the emulation device called the Retroid Pocket 6, and it can emulate up to PlayStation 2, Wii, and some Switch games. And it runs on
handheld?
Yeah, and it runs on Android.
Oh, a Wii.
Yes.
Handheld.
Yeah. It can run Mario Kart on the Wii. It's $215, and it can run anything prior to a PS2, a Wii, and some Switch titles.
Is this out now?
It is.
Yeah, I'm going to go get one.
Yeah.
All I had to hear was Wii game, handheld. I'm in.
It's a little difficult to upload games to it because it runs Android and not a stock OS.
Yeah.
But the UI on it is apparently very well done.
Okay. See, I've seen certain handheld devices like this at Best Buy. And I don't know if it's what you're talking about, though. They're like,
these are high-end gaming devices.
The ones at Best Buy?
No, Retroid Pocket is. It's custom made and from GPUs and all the crazy stuff.
See, now I really want to go blow some money on this.
Yeah, look it up first. See first before you spend a bunch.
I think I will. In terms of my answer to this, I'm also a console guy now. But coming up as a Ute, I love the concept of handheld gaming devices. I thought it was the coolest thing. Like, I remember I was probably in like first grade when I saw the Game Boy Advance for the first time. Little Dog writes in on our YouTube comments, OG Game Boy. Shout out. That's a good pick. I thought the concept of the Game Boy Advance was so cool. Never had seen that before. Then you had the SP, the little flip thing. But then Nintendo DS was fine. That was a good... I never had one of those.
I have a DS and a DSi, and we play them on our road trips.
Okay. The original DS?
The original gray DS, but also a DSi, yeah.
That's it. See? I never had one. I played it a little bit, but just broke my pen. I've never owned a DS, but my life changed when I saw somebody... I was at one of my friend's birthday parties, and I saw somebody playing, and 336-777-1600 is the number to call if you have thoughts on this. He was playing a PSP, a PlayStation Portable, which this was the era of the PlayStation 2, of which I had one. Loved it. Star Wars Battlefront. Tony Hawk. MVP Baseball. Hello. But the concept of, hey, you could play like TV quality games on this little handheld device, I thought was the coolest thing. And I wanted one. Didn't get one for a while because, like, you're a kid and you know, don't have money. And but I loved it. I thought it was the coolest thing. Yes?
Still talking about the PlayStation Portable?
Yeah.
You know you can jailbreak those now?
They figured I do. Out a,
yeah.
I do. So my answer to this is the PSP. Yours was the Retroid? Or was it the other thing?
I have the Miu Mini. I like that.
Okay,
it's
that good. One.
It's a little. It's a little. You can put it in your pocket. It's great.
Good options, though, either way. It's been Nerd Corner.
It's me, Mario.
Anyway, you know, I even like on the iPod, do you remember the iPod Touch?
Yes.
I thought, again, it's like there's just levels to this where that was like the first, like my cousin got one, and that was the first time I'd ever seen a touchscreen device before. And it was kind of like a saying, like, they got an app for that. Like, there's an app for everything. And they really did have an app for everything.
Back when gaming wasn't so expensive.
Yeah. Like, they had the little Zippo lighter app where you could flip it open and, like, interact with it. It's just the coolest thing. But it PSP, that was my go-to. The Phillies are a mess. The Philadelphia Phillies are a mess, to get back on track here. The Phillies, the Mets, the Red Sox, that is the... dumpster fire right now of Major League Baseball. Darren Vaught of ESPN and D1 Baseball going to be our guest on Thursday's show to kind of break down a little further some of these things. So the Phillies were tied with the Mets for the worst record in baseball at 9-19. And then they had lost six straight series and 11 of their last 12 games leading up to this. And now they have fired... As of earlier today, their manager, Rob Thompson, Don Mattingly, Yankee great. Got to throw that out there. He was the bench coach there, going to take over as interim for rest of the season. But at least, unlike Boston, they didn't fire everybody else on the coaching staff, like the third base coach and the first base coach and the hitting coach. They at least didn't do that. Because again, this is the part where I remind you, it's April 28th. Yes?
So from 2022 to April 28th, 2026, he went 355 and 270.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
I know.
That's above 500. I mean, it's...
Won the NL in 2022. Lost to the Astros in the World Series in six games that year. Made the playoffs every year under his leadership. Now, they had not won a playoff series since 2023, but it is going bad this year for Philly. It really is. Apparently, Alex Cora was offered the job. He already declined it. Apparently, he wants family time right now. Interesting. Probably doesn't want to go from one dumpster fire to another. I get it.
But they did this before. The Phillies did with Joe Girardi.
Yeah.
22-29 start, so they're known to cut early.
Mm-hmm. Of course, this is especially bad. I mean, the hitting's been awful. The starting pitching's probably been worse. The bullpen hasn't been able to get it together. I think they need a full reset. They're very top-heavy lineup with Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Trey Turner, and those guys. They built a win-now roster that worked for a couple of years, but now I think it's time for a reset in Philly. David Glenn, he's going to join us, I believe, tomorrow. He's from Philly. He's a Phillies fan. We were talking about Philly last week. When they had lost eight or nine straight, now that they've made something happen, I'd actually like to get his thoughts on this.
Sports talk for people who yell at the TV and mean it. If you just stay right here. You're on The Drive, the Triad's only live sports talk show.
We've got some picks. I needed to take a break from betting for a few days. Weekend picks weren't good. I didn't do Dalton's Dollars on Monday, but I did make some picks. That didn't go well. Full disclosure. We try to rectify that right now in Dalton's dollars.
Stack it up, stack, gotta stack it up. Get the money all the time now.
It's time to cash in. Welcome to Dalton's dollars.
Show me the money!
Show me the money.
Breaking down the board and building the bankroll.
As we mentioned, the Boston Celtics, Philadelphia 76ers tonight. Sixers are 11.5-point dogs on the road as they face elimination. I think Boston's going to go ahead and get this cleaned up, get this done tonight. And I do think they're going to cover 11.5-point favorites.
Show me the money!
I do think they're going to do that. Moving on to the Hawks and the Knicks. By the way, I do get Celtics at -118 odds. Just want to point that out. Hawks-Knicks. Hawks are 6.5-point dogs here. Series is all knotted up. It's at MSG. I think I like the Knicks to win tonight, but I like the Hawks to cover that. I get it. At -112 odds, we'll take it.
Show me the money!
Also, sticking with that game for a minute longer, I'm going to take CJ McCollum to go over 19.5 points.
Show me the money!
That's what I'm going to do. Now, in terms of the Blazers and the Spurs, I also think that series will end tonight. I think the Spurs are going to take care of that in front of their home crowd, but they are, let's see here. They're also favored by 11.5. I think I at least like Portland to scrape that and cover that.
Show me the money!
I think the Spurs handle it, but I mean, I can get that at -105 odds, so I'm going to do that. Getting to a little bit of hockey, the Sabres and the Boston Bruins. I like the Sabres, the Buffalo Sabres money line. I like that.
Show me the money!
Yeah, -164 odds, I can get that. And the one baseball pick that I have, Giants taking on the dumpster fire that is the Philadelphia Phillies. I texted DG in the break. I said, RIP to your Phillies. He was like, it's painful to watch. He will be a guest on tomorrow's show. But the San Francisco Giants, give me that money line.
Show me the money!
Oh, yeah. Kick them while they're down. Kick them while they're down. I get that at +138 odds, and I feel terrific about it. So, in review, Celtics, 11.5-point favorites. Hawks, 6.5-point dogs against the Knicks. CJ McCollum will go over 19.5 points in that game. The Blazers cover 11.5-point dogs against the Spurs, even though the Spurs finished the series tonight. Sabres, money line against the Bruins. Giants, money line against the Phillies. Spend Dalton's dollars. By the way, forgot to mention this. Did you happen to see that tickets to a Mets game is cheaper than a Crunchwrap Supreme?
I did not see this.
No?
But I love this.
Apparently, tickets to a Mets game right now is $6. $6. You can get a Crunchwrap Supreme for $6.39. I think I'll take the Crunchwrap Supreme. Have you had one of those?
That's the only thing I get from Taco Bell.
Crunchwrap Supreme?
That's it.
You don't get anything else?
Maybe the churro things.
What about the cinnamon twists?
Yeah, the churro things, yeah.
Oh, is that what the churro things are? I don't know. Yeah. I don't go to cinnamon Taco Bell twist. Like that, so I don't know.
I don't either. Maybe once every 2 years, but I love the Baja Blast.
It is good. I couldn't tell you the last time I went to a Taco Bell, but usually when I would go, it would be like on road trips for baseball. Like we'd stop at a Taco Bell on the way back. That always ended well on the bus.
It sounds like it went horribly every time. Why would you choose Taco Bell?
I'm not the right person to ask. I don't know.
The last time I got Taco Bell, I lost it in my car. Like, I left the bag. Like, it was a group of us, and they left my bag in my car, and I couldn't find it. And I started smelling it 4 days later when I forgot about it. So my car smelled horrible.
Yeah. I had one experience where we went to Taco Bell one of those trips, and they took forever to get our food, like obnoxiously long. And then they got everything wrong too. It wasn't a good day for Taco Bell. But I usually got like the Locos tacos.
I'd get those when they do like steal a base, steal a taco.
Yeah.
I worked across the street from a Taco Bell, so I'd walk across the street, get my Taco Bell.
Look at that.
Get a large Baja Blast.
Very convenient. Very convenient. Let's see. Meg the Stallion, Clay Thompson. Should we get into that? No, I don't think we should either.